Welcome, everybody, to episode 315 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, May 16th, 2018. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by J Trip Jacoby, John James Jacoby. If I say J Trip Jacoby, that's four J's. So.
It's technically four J's. Yeah. It's one too many J's. I don't qualify for that many.
That's right. Only three.
For the listeners out there, you need a haircut. I mean, I could see you Thanks. Over the video, but you need a haircut. It's interesting seeing you with longer hair.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It's frustrating. It's sweaty. It's frustrating. I have to maintain it by like brushing it somehow. I hate it. But
you know, most folks that shave their head do it because they can't grow the full luscious head of hair that you can.
Yeah, and here I am. I hate it. I picked up my mom's hair genes to my dad, so I'm not bald. I'm not balding. I got plenty of hair. And in fact, I should start like donating this.
You have more hair than I do. Yeah. Like I've got the, you know, up here, you're full head of hair. It's really impressive.
I'm full Chia Pet.
You are full Jeff Chandler. Chia Chandler.
Oh. Thank you. Yeah. I'm not even going to say it. Almost.
I wasn't going to say anything.
And you welcome everybody to another fantastic episode where we will get into some WordPress stuff and who knows what else. But on today's show, we're actually going to start off with John in the spotlight because we received a question from a listener named John Montgomery. And he says, hey, for the podcast with Triple J, it would be great to get an update about BBPress and its development. It's really languished over the years, it seems, and it would be nice if it saw some life and improvement or at least some communication from the devs. The RC3 for 2.6 has been out for a year, and the last post on the development blog was over 2 years ago. Several years ago, John, you may remember this, did an Indiegogo fundraiser, and one of the primary goals was to improve BBPress with query and caching performance improvements as well as perform moderation. What happened with those goals? Did you get rolled into trunk? Thanks. Love the podcast and the work John does. And before you answer that, John, I was reading this and I've been known to do this on the show before. I joke with you about because I contributed $20 to that crowdfunding campaign, and I'm always asking you, hey, you know, what's up?
You
know,
I get when are you going to get your 20,
yeah.
your 20 bucks worth?
Yeah, but then I read this, and I'm like, you know, maybe you should stop doing it, because when other people bring this up, it seems a little cringeworthy.
Oh,
you don't think so?
I don't think so. I think it's, especially with BBPress, because it hasn't seen a major release. At least BuddyPress has seen a bunch of releases since then. So it's like a bunch of questions rolled into one. And I usually don't bring it up or talk about it because I don't feel like I talk about the things that
The last time we talked about it is when just prior to or maybe just after WordPress.org unleashed the new support forms, which are running on BBPress. Is it 2.6?
So it's running on an older version of 2.6,
okay.
which is part of the reason why 2.6 hasn't shipped in for everyone else. And this has kind of been BBPress's problem for a long time. And it is, we are closer to this not being a problem than ever before, but it is still a problem. And so the reason we don't use the development blog anymore is because we wanted to move. Because so, if, for folks that aren't aware, BuddyPress and BBPress still have development blogs that are hosted on WordPress.com. BPDevil and BBPDevil.wordpress.com, and we want to get away from doing that and have a more make.wordpress.org style blog that we run off of BuddyPress and BBPress.org, but it hasn't been a huge priority. And so they've kind of just sat pretty abandoned, not because there isn't activity, but because we just don't use those sites the way that we thought or used to. And we want to have our own subsites and just haven't prioritized it. So we haven't done it. But Development on BBPress 2.6 has had moments where it has stopped, but it has otherwise been happening just relatively silently. So about last week or 2 weeks ago on the BBPress track, the 2.6 milestone reached zero tickets. So we finished everything that there was done to do and stuff that I took longer to do or to redo for 2.6. And so it, even on paper now, BBPress 2.6 is ready to go. Okay. It just needs, but the problem with shipping it is the same problem that we have on WordPress.org, is because BBPress uses custom post types and taxonomies, and because we sort of shoehorn a forum type of schema into post types and taxonomies, for sites that have lots and lots and lots of posts, depending on what you're trying to do with BBPress, it doesn't always perform very well. And so a ton of caching performance improvements went in to 2.6, lots of query performance tweaks.
I think you mentioned this process before, but due to the work of the migration on WordPress.org, a lot of the improvements from there and a lot of the work that went on there translated back into the upstream into the project itself.
That's exactly what happened. And so it would get deployed to WordPress.org. Jennifer Dodd and so others on the forums team would identify some things that they wanted hooks or filters in or ways that they could improve something and brought them back. And so they would deploy it, they'd notice some things, and they'd send it back upstream where I would try and whittle it away to make it work for everybody else. And so part of that is writing we renamed some metadata keys, and we did some things to make it perform a little bit better. And we need to make sure that everybody's old BBPress forums can migrate through to the new one. And so it's easy to do for sites that aren't huge. It's less easy to do for sites that have a million posts in them and stuff. And so what needs to happen next is we redeploy 2.6 as is out to WordPress.org. We micromanage that deployment across WordPress.org support forums and all of the Rosetta sites. And then we make sure, again, that all that is okay. And then I think we're good to go on calling 2.6, like done for real. I could, in theory, I could just ship it now and deal with the support burden if for some reason that there is something wrong. But I don't really feel like that is the best way to go about this. And so development's never really stopped. It's just more complicated because we have it integrated more tightly in a bunch of WordPress.org stuff. So if I look, because I suppose now's a good time as any, since we probably won't bring it up really anytime soon, is there's 380 closed issues in the 2.6 milestone. We ended up punting 75 or so out to 2.7. So there's some stuff that got pushed back. We've even moved, I think we got 40 tickets to 2.8. So we have like many roadmaps ahead. We cleaned out a waiting review. So there's like not much left in here, but 2.6 is awesome. Like we cleaned up some admin menu stuff. We added a bunch of features. Again, we didn't really expect to. So, you know, I J-tripped, scope creeped this a little bit, but it's actually really cool with a lot of feedback from the WordPress.org forum team. So shout out to them. Some moderation improvements and spamming and bulk editing, topics, replies, those kind of things. And then a lot of stuff.
So your feelings wouldn't get hurt if somebody, maybe on Twitter or somebody else, says, hey, you know, I haven't seen any new posts on the development blog. Is BBPress dead?
It doesn't, no.
We've already talked about this happens to other projects, and we always talk about communication.
Right. I think it used to bother me years ago, because back then it was like it felt like we had a lot of momentum. We had, like, with both of the BBs, and you know, 2010, 11, 12, 13, when people would ask, well, what's going on with this project? Is it dead or is it, what's wrong with it? What's going on? There's like a lack of whatever. I think it bothered me more then because literally there were several people like doing massive amounts of work and making it really, really cool. And so when people asked then, it was like, well, how, I don't know how much more to communicate and or how to communicate more effectively or who's supposed to do it where in order to get the word out. But now that I think like development on the BBs has both sort of slowed down because they're kind of doing what they set out to do now. And because we're really not communicating as much as we were, it doesn't surprise me that people might think that. So it doesn't really bother me that much anymore because it, people say it all the time. Like you said, people are going to look for, something. They're going to look for indicators that there's something has life. And if they don't see what they're looking for, then they're going to question it. And, BB Press is definitely, part of that. The blog itself, like the bbpress.org blog, I think maybe I posted when we updated something in September of 2017.
So I think mostly it's been used to push out minor releases for security updates.
Yep. And so 2.5 still has over 380,000 installs. So when 2.6 goes out and we've done some refactoring and upgrading of all these things, that's potentially 380,000 support requests. So I really want to make sure that this is what we've got here now is good. And it's running on all of WordPress.org and BuddyPress and BBPress.org always get the like latest nightly deployed. But I'm worried about WordPress.org a little bit. And we've been in RC and beta for a long time, but there's so little feedback that comes in from beta and release candidate releases.
And it makes you think everything's cool.
And I don't, it just doesn't seem realistic. And so if this, I guess, can be my question for folks to really go out and test the BB Press 2.6 release candidate and let me know if things are okay out there in BB Press land, would be useful to know. Because so far, I don't really subscribe to the no news is good news mentality when it comes to releasing software. No news is like kind of scary. It's the scariest part because the news that comes in is only when something is wrong. And so we really have no information on how many people are testing when or how. And this is my ask to go out and test BB Press 2.6. Let me know.
Is this your pick of the week? You know, asking people to.
If I'm allowed to have a piece of software that I work on be my own pick of the week, I will leverage that opportunity. And it, BB Press 2.6 can be my pick of the week this week.
But BB Press 2.6 does not merge comments and replies, sort of the functionality of blog comments. And so the project's dead to me for now.
It's dead to you. But so one of the coolest parts of, since we're talking about it, and since we probably won't talk about it again, I'm going to take the time to talk about it. One of the coolest parts that we built for 2.6, of which there are several things that are really cool in BB Press 2.6. One of the cooler things is that, and one of the things that causes a little bit of data migration is BB Press has always come with favorites and subscriptions. And for the most part, they work kind of the same way that old BB Press had them work, which also didn't really scale very well. And so we switched up the way that it works. But now favorites, subscriptions, per forum moderators, and like what we call voices, or like the number of people that have or the users that have interacted with a topic or a thread, all use the same API underneath called the engagements API. And so there's like a universal API underneath for sort of connecting multiple user IDs to multiple posts. And that is kind of a good framework for doing a multi-to-multi kind of thing without having to do a lot of work. You could use taxonomies and terms if you wanted to. You could use post meta if you wanted to, which is what we use in BB Press Core right now. But you could use a custom database table. It's sort of architected to be swapped out if you want to take on some ownership of making that function quickly or more efficiently or whatever else. And so being able to build that out for WordPress.org to unplug part of that API and replace it with something that's going to perform better was like a hidden scope creep thing that was like, well, we can just do this. Let's just do this now. But for sites that have a million subscriptions or favorites, they're going to need some handholding when it comes time to upgrade to 2.6. So it'll tell users, hey, we've identified that this has more records than we can automatically upgrade. So you're going to have to, you know, take your site down and babysit this a little bit. But it's not a hugely labor intensive thing. We have a bunch of like data migration scripts and tools that are in the tools part of WP Admin that are BBPress specific tools now. So there's a lot to like. That's really cool. It's just I don't want to have folks mad at me when it goes out if it breaks stuff.
I think we adequately addressed John's question from one John to another.
Well, thanks for asking, John. Sorry that, you know, 2.6 is, you know, what it is, but I promise it will happen eventually. And it's great. So it's coming.
All right. Last week after we published the episode last week, it seems the rest of the week was all around releases. So quite a few different projects were released, and one of them was WordPress 4.9.6 beta 1. And this is a pretty important release. Now, judging by the release numbers, it's a minor release, but this isn't your typical minor release because it has quite a few UI enhancements and privacy-related features, of course, because of the upcoming GDPR that goes into effect in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
In 2 Fridays, so May 25th. And so I decided to do some testing to check out the privacy features. One of the first things you might notice if you upgrade to 4.9.6, if you're testing the beta, is that now on the successful update screen, we used to just have a what's new credits and freedoms tab. Well, now there's a new privacy tab, which says that kind of informs users that from time to time, your WordPress site may send data to WordPress.org, including but not limited to the version of WordPress you are using and the list of installed plugins and themes, which this data is used to check and see if there's a new version available on either the theme or plugin repos, and you can download it and install it. And then there's also some other information about the data it's collected, and there's a link to the WordPress.org stats page and the privacy page. And, you know, and we already received a comment on the tavern that says, well, how can they say from time to time? That's just a blatant lie, because WordPress is always sending data back to the mothership. So I don't know about that. I mean, I don't think it's not sending data all the time, but there is frequent pings throughout the day to all those repos because it's checking to see if there's a new version available.
Yep. It checks, I think, every 12 hours, maybe every 24. For some reason, it misses one.
Or if you manually visit the plugins page or the updates page, there are ways to trigger that check manually.
The updates page, you can click the button and trigger it. Man, that's exactly right. And the privacy tab is a good, I mean, do we want to go through this? Because we can scrutinize this if you want to, but I mean, it's all good stuff.
What do you want to scrutinize? I'm just kind of going through all the different changes and improvements I've seen. We could talk about them. Why not?
Because the privacy tab is a great idea. That should have always been there. Like explaining, being open about what it is that WordPress is sending and what that looks like. I feel like it should be more though. Like this tab eventually will be the place where WordPress says, this is what we're sending. This is what we're getting back. This is what we're using it for. It is pretty opaque right now. It's pretty general. And
this is the first pass, you know.
It is the first pass, right? It's not as open or transparent as I would expect for WordPress as a project in the community to want to be. This is like marketing speak. This is what we're going to tell you how open that we are without actually being open.
But here's, if you want to know how, here's a link.
Here's a link to go read more about how open we are And then when you go to the link, there's not really much more to read other than 2,000 words about how open you are without actually saying, this is the stuff we're sending. This is what we're using it for. That's what privacy, if you're going to be open and transparent, here's what we want. Here's what we're doing with it.
And that's one of the fundamental tenets of the GDPR. It's what data are you collecting and what are you using it for?
Yep. And so this doesn't answer those questions yet. It's there. It's a place to answer those questions, but it doesn't answer them there yet. And then the same thing, the policy, like the privacy policy page creation and template, bothers me a lot. I really don't like it at all.
Now, do you mean the default text that's used in the privacy policy, the suggestions?
I don't like the default text. I don't like that this privacy settings page is called out the way that it is with three paragraphs that no one is going to read, and that there are already two pages that are special in WordPress, and they're not here with this very other specific special page. We have the front page for your site, and we have the blog page for your posts. If what we're doing is building some settings for where your special pages are and what they do, then this page should be with those other two pages, because there are now three special pages in WordPress that have special assignments. And this is not unusual for plugins like EDD or WooCommerce to have checkout pages and success pages, transaction failure pages. You take a page and then you assign it some very special particular meaning value. BuddyPress did this way back in the day, but we got away from it because it didn't really make a lot of sense. Now you can do it if you want to, but it'll magically figure it out if you don't. It's okay, there are different approaches to this, but I don't like that this one page has its own setting and it's all text that isn't in the help tab and it's not grouped with the other two special pages. To me, it's important that there maybe is a privacy setting, but this makes this setting feel like it does not have other similar settings like it, because I don't get to create a new page or use a specific page. There's no similar UI for my blog post page or my front page. And even though that setting has been in settings for the longest time, it never got this treatment. And so why is this setting not over there? Or why are those two settings not over here? Because they do the exact same thing, just for like a different intent. And so to me, it's confusing. It's another way to confuse users.
And then if you look at the images I use where I tested all this out, I use poopy.life.
I saw that. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for doing
it. Come on. Laugh. Poopy.
I'm going to hold it back. Right. Serious GDPR business.
You're so serious.
Talking about the GDPR right now. This is serious. Working professional.
So take a look at the suggested tech. Now, one of the things people brought up is that
I also don't like.
All right. Go ahead.
I also don't like that the URL is privacy/privacy-policy. Why isn't it just /privacy? Complicate it and have -policy? Is it because we're concerned that some people will already have privacy pages and that we don't want to overlap it? Well, if that's the concern, then we solve that problem with a different solution. But the fact that it's by default privacy-policy means that it's harder to say. It's less intuitive. It's like instead of having /about/about-us, don't do that because it's harder to say /about. This should just be /privacy. And so when it's hard when there are so many little things that you see as like little gotchas and snags, because you don't want to be critical, you don't want to offend anybody. People are sensitive and stuff about the stuff that they design and create and their intentions and why and the verbiage and the placement and everything else. And so none of this, again, I feel like the disclaimer is like necessary every week for like, this isn't meant to be discouraging or critical as much as it is like, it is impossible to really deliver this kind of in-depth feedback about 50 different features that are all part of the same one thing. Like if the same one feature has new screens, new buttons, new text, new features, new layouts, new approaches to everything, it's hard to write up all of this in 15 different track issues and go to the Slack channel and have the conversation. It's just too much now. And so I don't want to use the show as like my own personal feedback soapbox, but this is an important feature that is user facing that has multiple new screens. And to be honest, I just don't like any of them yet.
All right. So hold on. Get off your soapbox. All right.
Okay.
I got to reel this in. I got to reel you in, baby.
Okay.
But if we take a look at the privacy policy, so there's a template set up, and one of the notices on top says that this suggested privacy policy text comes from plugins and themes you have installed, which I've received feedback in the comments on the Tavern that says this is a bit misleading because it suggests that the plugins and themes you have installed are scanned, and some of the text that's in the privacy policy template is based on those plugins, and that's not what happens at all. So if you're if you're using a Google Analytics plugin, the text is not added to the privacy policy based on you having that plugin installed because there is no scanning involved there. So I believe there's probably some miswording within that statement that could be changed around to make it better. And if you look at the template itself, you know, there are a couple of different things within the template. Contact forms is not covered, obviously, because they can't create one universal policy setting for all contact forms. But generally, it gives you a bit of a foundation, and ultimately, it's your responsibility as the site owner and as individuals to create and edit the policy that fits for the purposes of your site.
So you know what was confusing to me about the privacy policy, like recommended text, because you're talking about the yellow, the orange bordered thing, right? Yeah. The thing that was confusing to me about it, and this is just probably because we're too close to the whole WordPress thing, is like I didn't know when I first saw it, because there's the privacy policy text that says this suggested privacy policy text comes from blah, 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 blah. We suggest reviewing this text and then copy and pasting it into your privacy policy page. And then directly below it is what kind of looks like a text area that says who we are. And then it says our website address, but then it shows your website. And then what personal data we collect and why we collect it. I don't know what we were talking about anymore. Are we talking about the WordPress.org we? We suggest reviewing this text, then copy and pasting it into your privacy policy page. But now we're talking about we as the site owner, which is me, and it's my website address. It speaks to both. Like I don't know what it means, and it's kind of confusing without explaining where does this text go. If you are a registered user and upload images to the website, you should avoid uploading images with XFGPS location data. Should I avoid doing that myself, or does that mean that GPS data goes to WordPress.org because they suggested this policy privacy text? Like it really
I'm
gets
already me. Lost.
You know what I mean? And so I wondered, what problem are they trying to solve with this text? To who? And because it was confusing, because I didn't know who was speaking and who the intended audience was, I didn't really understand what the point of this feature was. And that made it really hard to say, like, I'm so confused that I don't know what to do about this next. And since it's in the screenshot in your post, I figured I'd bring that up because it just didn't make any sense to me.
You're welcome. And there are two things. Now, to comply with the GDPR, sites need to provide a way for users to obtain their personal data via export and have a way to request that their data be removed. And what 496 does is it adds two additional user interface areas, two areas in the back end under the tools menu. Now, so there's two submenus now. There's export personal data or remove personal data. And this is where site admins can verify or send a confirmation request to users who request that their data be removed, or if they request their data to begin with. One of the things that threw me for a loop is like, well, okay, if I'm a user, how do I make that request on how to get my data or to have it deleted? And I thought that there was a button or something in WordPress because, well, we have the UI to confirm the request. So how does the user make that request? And it turns out that when you're making your privacy policy page, it's best for you to explain where to submit those types of requests, whether that's through a contact form or through an email address or contacting a data data protection officer. You make the request through there, and as long as you get that user's email address, you can, or I guess username for the site, you could put that into one of those two areas in the WordPress backend. They will receive a confirmation link, and once they click that link, they will receive an email with a URL with a zip file if it's a data export, and that zip file will contain one index.html file, which contains all their metadata, user data, comments, media, everything related to the site that they can have on record if they choose.
You know what
go ahead.
You know what it doesn't include?
Why?
It doesn't include your request. So if I request to you my information, that request goes into your, where? Your email box? How, like, the export doesn't include my request for my export. Does that make sense? So let's say I want to I want an export of all of the information that you have on me. So I have to send you an email, or I have to send something through a contact form to you.
Mm-hmm.
WordPress is only going to export what it knows to export, which is posts, comments, and eventually what your contact form plugin hooks into when that becomes available.
So, you're saying if you did like a request for personal data removal, that okay, all your data would be removed, but you'd still leave this crumb of data behind.
Yep. It's little things like this. I do. I really do. Because aside from all of this stuff, just like this is the wrong solution to the wrong problem, but it proves it by having this process be so backwards and just silly. It's just silly. Like, in order to request my data, I have to submit a request that generates more data. And then when I get my data back, it doesn't include my request anyways. It defeats the purpose of the whole thing by itself.
And then if the admin goes through the process, puts in the email address or the username, it'll show you a little something that says submission was sent to the user. And once they click it and it's confirmed, once you visit the page again, you'll see status has been confirmed. It'll say next steps, where you can send an export link or delete their data. And their email address or username stays within the back end on one of those pages, because it shows you, it logs who is the request for. It logs the request that the admin made to the user, not the user making to the admin.
Right. And then let's say that I'm the site owner, and you send a request to me for me to export your personal data. I go to this screen that says export personal data. I punch in the email address that you gave me, and I hit send request. And so now we've just sort of created this race condition where I've added more data with your email address. There is now a custom post type that has your email address as a metadata value. And that's in there as an external, there is an export request. When that HTML file gets sent to you, that also does not include the request that I added for you to get your data. Like, it's really only doing like the bare minimum of posts and comments. And it's not doing options or transients or metadata values. There's no way it could, because it could be anything. And so it's incomplete. And not because anyone did a bad job.
Incomplete, right? Or just a version one?
I mean, maybe both. But this shoehorning this feature into custom post types is also the wrong approach. This is like, we know there are bottlenecks. but we're doing it anyways. This needs to be its own thing, really.
One of the things I noticed throughout testing is that when a user confirms the request, the site admin does not receive an email or a notification bubble that the request has been confirmed. And now this has already been covered. There's a track ticket already involved with this. At the bare minimum, they're working on at least the site admin getting an email that the user has confirmed this. But there's also the idea of perhaps, and this is something I suggested, and this is also being discussed, is that when you log in, WordPress already notifies you of comments in moderation with a notification bubble, pending updates. And I was thinking maybe something like that could be used for confirmation requests or pending confirmations. I guess there would be no pendings, because at this point, users are not notifying the site admin through the back end. It's usually through an email or something, so it'd be the other way around. But once the user confirms, you'd see a bubble saying,
yep,
you know, this person, this is how many confirmations you have, and it would automatically take you to the right screen to where you can then either send them an email link or delete their data.
You're so on the right track. That's already been working on. And the reason that this doesn't exist here is because it also hasn't existed for users in general in WordPress forever. And this is one of those reasons why BuddyPress exists in the first place, is because there's just not a ton of interest in making user management better in WordPress core. Like, if you have registration turned on single site or even on multi-site, and a user signs up for your site, there is a setting where it will email the site admin that you have, a new user has been created or has registered their account. In the UI, to your point, there is no bubble that says there are 10 pending signups. Or there is no UI for signups that says this user has signed up 2 days ago and they haven't activated their account yet. Instead, there's nothing. On single site, you don't even get to see it. And on multi-site, there's no UI for it at all. I have a plugin that adds a UI for it, but it should be part of WordPress that should say, here are the signups, here are the users.
You install a plugin for BuddyPress to actually go through and be notified that so many people have signed up, and I had to go through and approve them as if I was moderating comments.
Yep. And so Boone Gerges made a plugin for managing signups, and then I didn't know that, and I also made my own afterwards. And then we ended up rolling kind of a hybrid of both of them into BuddyPress core to be able to identify visually that there are users that have signed up for accounts. Because this is just one of those missing features in WordPress that, you know, most people don't consider. And it's not anybody's fault that people don't think about it, because 99.999% of WordPress installs are one WordPress site with one WordPress user, and registration is turned off, and it is just a site that people run. And so WordPress is coded for the most common use case. Most people don't have signups turned on or open registration or communities that their sites are running on. But we're running into those growing pains, not from the community side of it, but on the WooCommerce side of it, where people are, you're a customer, but you're a user, and you've got data and transactions and money, and people want to know what you know about them, and people want to be able to manage their accounts and all these things. And so, it's good that WooCommerce is helping bring awareness to a problem that folks, I mean, like at least me or some others have been saying, like, hey, y'all, everyone, this is a big oversight that is missing that will eventually get attention in one way or another. And so that's why there's no bubbles here. That's why there's no real semblance of users here. It's all just data in, data out, because most folks don't really think about it that way.
And speaking of data, do you know what cookies do? Cookies save data. Cookies in a way provide convenience, especially if you allow anonymous commenting on your site and people use the same information to fill in the details like the name, email, and website fields on the comment form. If you allow the browser to save a comment of that, you won't have to fill those fields in again. You just put in your comments. So it kind of gives you the feeling like you're a registered user. In 4.9.6, visitors will be informed of this data storage and will need a checkmark, a box to opt in for this cookie to be created and saved. on the site. So this is one of those little privacy things that we ended up thought of. Okay.
The text that we ended up with in that checkbox right now, is one of my several recommendations, because the problem with this text still is the text says save my name, email, and website in this browser for the next time I comment, which is a pretty good compromise. I think it's very clear what data is being saved. It communicates what the intent of this checkbox is. It's unchecked by default, so it meets all the GDPR type things. But the problem with this cookie and it saying this is that plugins like BBPress use this cookie for anonymous posting. So BBPress will need its own version of text for this same exact checkbox. And if it's using the same cookie, then other plugins that do other things, form plugins, or I don't know if WooCommerce or EDD hook into them at all, but for customer data that this form, the comment form, is pluggable, has filters in it so that plugins can add fields to it. And so if plugins add fields to this form, and if those fields are saved in the cookie, then this comment text is no longer accurate. And so by hard coding name, email, and website into this checkbox, we are gambling that plugins will somehow filter this text and be good citizens to add their thing into it, which you can't really do translation-wise because it's going to mess stuff up. If what we want to do is be transparent with users about what data we're saving in a cookie, then the text for this checkbox needs to be generated based on the fields that are in the form. Because if BBPress adds something else to it, then it should be here, and it's not. So this is the best version that I could come up with for comment or for text for this checkbox. Some other folks agreed, but it's still not 100% perfect, but it's better.
So there you go. That's sort of the roundabout way of talking about some of the privacy features in WordPress 4.9.6. Heavily encourage everyone out there who is able to, if you have a staging site, to install 4.9.6 beta 1, give it a test run. Go through the process of exporting data, confirming user data, go through that process, and then file any bug reports or feedback on the alpha beta support forums. Speaking of 4.9.6, there have been there's some schedule changes in effect. The release candidate and 4.9.6 release have been pushed back by 2 days. So the release candidate is aimed to be released Thursday, May 10th, which is tomorrow. And then the release Thursday, May 17th, and we'll have to see if that schedule is stuck to based on the amount of feedback and some of the concerns we have about the text and privacy features in this version of WordPress. But that kind of gives you a heads up on what to expect. And we're going to see a lot of things released before May 25th in the WordPress space.
Well, yes, we are.
Yeah. And hey, on Star Wars Day, May the 4th, last week, there was a new version of Gutenberg. You know what Gutenberg is, right, John?
I may have heard of it. I was hoping we would talk about Gutenberg again.
Oh, yeah, sure you were. So Gutenberg 2.8 was released, and this version, like many of the others, is all about refinements, enhancements, improving what's already there. There is a new block that they add. It's called a spacer block. So this gives you the ability to create an empty area. And it's just one more way of messing around with the layout. You know, if you have a lot of images, gallery images, or you want to create a nice space that's more than just like a line break, you could do that now within your content. There have been some accessibility improvements, especially around the color palette. Lot of bug fixes, and one of the bug fixes in here I noticed had to deal with, let's see if I can, there we go. So it says introduce editor media upload wrapper and fix issue with images not being attached to a post. And I thought of you, John, when I read that. Maybe you can give that a test run and see if your issue of images not being attached to a post has been fixed.
You know, whenever I see the Gutenberg changelog for each release, there is a part of me that's a little jealous of like how much they are accomplishing. Because it's just like 130 things. Like every few days is like, here's a ton more stuff that they're doing. And that kind of activity is, I mean, not super easy to manage or wrangle, but at the same time, they're just changing everything so fast that it's exciting. And you know,
one of the fixes is improve the G in Gutenberg ASCII too.
I saw that. Yeah. Yes. Did you see Gary's? Is it linked? Is there a link to that? No, there's not. So Gary Pendergast had tweeted his G change, and it was probably the best part of this release, in my opinion. It really does make it, you know, stand out the way it's supposed to.
I will say a continuing issue I have with Gutenberg, and this is easily reproducible if you copy text from a Google Doc and you paste it into Gutenberg. Gutenberg does a really good job at putting the text in their appropriate blocks. But if you want to create new blocks in between those, the plus sign is gone. It disappears. And you have to click around in different spots to where you somehow create a space in between two existing blocks. And then that plus sign shows up and now you can create a block. So I'm very confused and I don't really understand why that plus sign ever disappears and why sometimes you could just move a block up or down. You can't add a new block. And that's something I'm still struggling with.
You know, I had the same experience and feedback as you with that, where I really wasn't.
Plus sign sure. Should just stay there all the time. And
I feel like it should.
Why it disappears.
Yeah, I feel like it should too. Like it, and then it's possible to hit the plus sign like multiple times. So you can have like a bunch of empty blocks that do nothing. Yeah. And then you can't just delete the block. Like there's no trash can for it because it's empty. The trash can doesn't appear.
You're showing me.
Like, and I assume that that's by design because everyone is sort of looking at so much Gutenberg stuff that it's hard to file an issue without spending an hour like installing, updating, making a video, proving it, explaining, pleading your case. And then by then it's like time for lunch and I haven't done anything. quirky little things.
A couple other things related to Gutenberg. The WooCommerce team has published a feature plugin for WooCommerce that they're calling a Gutenberg. And it's a product block. And what this does, they say it's a modern version of their product short code built for Gutenberg. So with this block, you can add individual handpicked products to a post or page, products from specific categories, featured products, sale products, products with specific attributes or terms, bestsellers or top-rated products, or you could add all your products. And they have a pretty cool video that shows it in action. And I have not used it personally, but just looking at the video, it's way better than using a short code. Add a block, everything's visual, you can adjust the columns. And one of the cool things, at least for me, from my takeaway on how they built this, was the research they did on how people were using the short codes. So they did some testing. They said that they analyzed the product short code on about 10,000 WooCommerce sites. I don't know how they did that or you know, whether that's telemetry or side, I'm not sure. But they said that they learned that the most popular applications of the short codes were to display specific products, product categories, and featured products, and that very few stores seem to use it to display top-rated products, best-selling products, or products with specific attributes. And so they did some user testing of their first iteration of their blocks, and they found out that their first iteration had too many options. So there's these little toggles that were in the bottom of the block where you could display this, display that, turn them on and off. It turns out that users didn't like that, or they felt inundated with too many options. So they took those away, ended up with a much simpler, easier to use block. And they did some more user testing and they discovered that they actually discovered two important things about Gutenberg itself. They said that every single test participant Most who had never used Gutenberg before got stuck when adding a block. Yeah, I think I'm one of those people. And they had trouble locating the advanced settings. They said that they've shared the results with the Gutenberg team. A fix has already been deployed for the second issue, which is locating the advanced settings. And they're currently exploring design options to address the first. But this is a really cool visual example of really the end goal for, I mean, if we go back to the end goal of Gutenberg, that is the mystery meat, creating a unified, simplified interface for short codes and all that other, you know, widgets and everything else into WordPress. And if this presentation of just the WooCommerce short codes and adding products is really cool to see. You know, it really shows the power, just some of the capabilities that Gutenberg offers for short codes.
Yep, I thought so too. Like, it really highlights in a way that I think is easy for most people to identify and understand, like what the practical use case is for a Gutenberg type block. And in a way that isn't something that you couldn't have imagined in Tiny MCE by itself. Because I think that's the part of this that sometimes is missing, is some of these blocks are like, oh, well, that's cool, but this could have been done with the old editor, drop caps or anything else. And so this is the first time where there's a good, other than the built-in Gutenberg blocks, but this is like the first kind of real block where, and I like the pop-up window that they've got when they hit slash and it shows up the like short code hover, like their own specific products. You have to see the video. They have their own like block picker for bringing out the featured products. And it really goes above and beyond. It's showing like how to customize them, columns, rows, sizes, text, everything. And in some of the other folks, like with Atomic Blocks and others, so shout out to everybody else that's trying to work on Gutenberg blocks these days. But this was the first one for most people, I think, where you're going, oh yeah, you couldn't have done that before.
Yeah, and you're doing a lot of things, visual, clicking, adjusting toggles and options within the block. And if you look at the equivalent of, you know, if you say, well, you could probably accomplish this in TinyMCE, you're probably doing it with, first, you got to know the short code. Then you got to know the parameters. Then you got to know the product IDs. Then you got to know the arguments. Then you probably got to know everything there is to know about, and then put all those things into the short code and then hope it works. And then editing that is a pain in the rear. Previewing it is a pain in the rear. And that's another thing about the cool thing about blocks is you can see how your products will look in the back end in the block. So you get real time previewing and you don't have to click save draft preview and see it on the front end. We could see it right there in the back end, which is another huge benefit of the block system.
Yep. And the block system, it reminds me a lot of and Gutenberg in general reminds me of like music, where like everyone loves vinyl. And then when everything went digital, all of the purists said, I'm going to stick with my vinyl. It sounds better. It's, you know, acoustically superior and everything else. And it's the same thing with like DJing and DJ equipment. DJs that want vinyl and prefer vinyl, it's hard to get them to go digital and use a newer controller or a CDJ, or to get them to move off of their crate of literal vinyl records into using Serato or Rekordbox or some other piece of software to digitize everything. But then once you see it and you realize that it is more convenient, you're carrying around less stuff, it's hard to not love it and want to use it. And that's kind of what Gutenberg is for me, where I'm old school and I do love a good vinyl record, but the convenience and the visual of Gutenberg and the results that come out of it are worth the stuff that maybe you don't like or that makes you uncomfortable, because it carrying around 30 crates of vinyl records isn't the way to do this anymore. The way to do this is to visualize all your blocks, lay it all out, and be done. It's not writing HTML or going into the HTML editor and fixing or hacking stuff. It's just trusting the software to do what the software is supposed to do. So this was a good video that showed that off, I thought.
And speaking of WooCommerce, today they released WooCommerce 3.4.0 RC1. Now, they consider this a minor release, which has quite a few improvements and some new features, and of course, some GDPR-related enhancements. So you'll want to check out and test the latest version of WooCommerce. In fact, there's some things that have been deprecated. I think this version now recommends WordPress 7. PHP 7.2 now. And they're doing that. And there's a couple other changes as well that you should be apprised of. So if you run a WooCommerce store, we'll have links to the show notes, things in the show notes to things you need to know. And then we'll end the show today. Remkes de Vries, he did a guest.
He said it in like the most Midwestern accent possible.
Yes. Well, I mean, but he wrote this awesome guest post for the Tavern that recaps his experience at the first ever WordCamp retreat, which was held this past weekend in. Go ahead. You pronounce that city name.
Oh, no, I'm not Remkes. I'm not even going to try.
So it's in Germany. But by all accounts, from everything I've read on Twitter, social media about this event, it was a huge success. Some people even saying it's the best WordCamp event they've been to, a best WordPress event they've been to. And they, a lot of people saying that they hope that this becomes sort of the norm. And basically what Remkes says is that they took a very different approach to the WordCamp. The WordCamp concept, and some of the things that made it way different was that the location was exclusive for the WordCamp attendees. So the venue only had WordCamp attendees. There were indoor and outdoor activities. You could work on your personal development strengths, enjoy co-working under ideal conditions, alternate between valuable input and relaxation. And there was benefits from previously unknown networking opportunities. So although there were sessions and things of that nature, there were a lot of hallway tracks, breaks in between.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of activities and a schedule set up to where it was built around social interaction with the attendees. And one of the other things that he says he enjoyed was that contributor day was on day 2 of 3. So kind of in the middle of everything, he says it kind of, they were kind of locked into attending the contributor day. And although Remkes is not a big fan of forcing people to do anything, he says it was a nice way of integrating the giving back part of WordCamp.
Yep.
So he says that he really enjoyed his time there, the relaxed schedule, and hopes to see this event or something like it happen a lot more across the world. So thanks, it's Remkes, for that, for the guest post. And for
It really takes the best of all of the best WordPress-based events and combines them up into one thing. Yeah. Like the location being exclusive reminds me of WordPress.com VIP workshops, where they happen in an exclusive location with a small group of people there for like a very purposeful kind of thing. And yeah, there is a schedule, and yeah, you've paid and you're suggested that you adhere to it. But everything else that you do on that location is hanging out at the bar or hanging out outside at a table or hanging out in the pool together or going on a walk somewhere and just like being with people in that same space is like the unconference style hallway track that is the best part of these kind of events. I still remember very fondly like hanging out with Josh and Sally Strebble after WordCamp, probably Chicago or maybe WordCamp Phoenix, just playing bags, just hanging out, talking about WordPress, getting to know one another. And it's like those kind of interactions that stick with you, that keep relationships going for years and years, even if you don't always work together or see each other. And that's what events like this give to folks. They walk away from this with like renewed relationships with friends and meeting, making new relationships with people that they wouldn't have otherwise made if it wasn't for this. So this is my favorite kind of event. I'm sorry that I missed it, but I'm excited to see more of it.
Yeah, and this was actually, if I take a look, yeah, this so, and this actually type of format was suggested a few. I'm trying to think back here because WordPress community team. When was this? They were considering this and brought the idea to the team. I want to say earlier this year or back in May 2017, Sarah Gooding wrote about this, where the WordPress community team was considering a new retreat-style WordCamp. So they were talking about it. It's been sort of in discussion for about the better case of a year. At this WordCamp retreat, there was 180 attendees, and apparently it was a home run. So congrats to the very first one being a success, and it was backed by the WordPress community, the foundation and stuff. So hopefully we see more of these type of events in the future in different places in the world.
Well, you know, a bunch of folks have, they did Camp Press, Beach Press. There are many of these kinds of Cabo Press, right? There are so many of that. Kind of bring up their own opportunity for networking and have their own emphasis on things.
And they all have something in common, which is a schedule if you so choose to follow it, but mostly, hey, we're just here. Let's relax. Let's enjoy each other's company. Let's get to know each other and talk business or whatever else comes up.
Yep. And they're great. Those are like the only events. I mean, I love WordCamps and stuff, but like those are the ones that I want to go to. They're the ones where it's like you really make friendships that way. You give a better.
I want you and I to go to cornhole camp where we just play cornhole and then like drink rum chata floats.
Yeah. It's like the most Midwestern event that we could possibly get. We'll have rum chata floats. We play the toss bags.
Am I allowed to say cornhole on a podcast, or is that like an FCC?
This is your podcast. You can say anything you want. That is the name of that game. There's nothing inappropriate about that, Jeff. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. I know. Well, I mean, I think I've called you a cornhole before. But
I'm sure you have. I thought you're going to start introducing me as your cornhole co-host.
That's an idea for next week. So. Other than that, there are a couple other things that are going on in the works.
Camp Grand Rapids is coming up. Your Raid Kent camp is coming up again.
Yes.
Looking forward to all of those. Are you still going to Kent?
Yeah. I'm thinking I gotta buy my tickets, I guess. But you know, by the time I remember to buy my tickets, I'll probably be sold out. But I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, now your status has changed from yes to I don't know. We'll see. It's not good. It's not looking good.
I don't know.
You're gonna need to get a haircut by then, and you're not gonna want to. Yeah, and so,
haircut by then. Anyways, other than that, anything else?
I have one other fun off topic thing that I can.
Oh, here we go. I can always count on you for off topic.
You can. I mean, you know, this is my time to talk to you in the week too. So, you know, if folks have to get subjected to a little bit of that, then I'm sorry, but this is my Jeff time also. So, did you see the video of the woman that stole our goats?
No, so, I've heard about it. I've seen it referenced. I did not watch it.
So this has made its way around a little bit where it's on. We had these goats. They were steel welded, like lawn ornaments that were just two goats, like a mommy goat and a baby goat.
I knew I should have clicked the link.
And they were just right out in front of the house, and they weren't cheap, but they were cute. They've been out in front of the house for probably a year and a half or so. Maybe a year, and someone stole them. We look on the Nest because we've got a camera on the porch to, like, you know, packages and all the things. And so we found the footage of the person who stole our lawn ornaments, and it the video is crazy. And so the video, I will spare everyone the details about, but you know, when you file a police report and you send it to our local police chief and say, hey, here's what happened. We did our own little forensics to kind of try and enhance the video and figure out what kind of car it was and everything else. And so sent what we knew to our local police department, and it was no harm. Nobody got hurt. So it's a funny kind of story because you could see the video and it looks like a lady, and she comes up our driveway, she steals our stuff and she leaves. And so they posted it on their Facebook account, this video from my Nest. And now like, the local TV, NBC affiliate has gotten wind of this video. And so it's been viewed, you know, 10,000 times or so with this person slamming on the brakes and the whole thing. And so, yeah, we've gone a little viral because we had some lawn ornament stolen and happened to have a Nest.
That stuff doesn't happen in East Troy. Come on.
And so it doesn't. That's the thing. Is this is the kind of thing that doesn't really happen. And if it does, I guess, you know, who has the camera set up to notice it? So
the folks are getting a kick out of it. Up in the scrapyard yet?
So, you know, I'll let everyone come to their own conclusions. And I don't really want to come to many conclusions because I've had lots of stuff stolen in my life, roller skates, bikes, cars, whatever. And so, you know, it's okay. Life will go on, but it is really, really, you feel very bullied, very violated when something like that happens. And so I know Carrie is able to laugh about it now, but she was very upset when it first happened because they're cute and you don't want to go buy them again. And so, you know, people say, well, now buy some other ones and
I should buy some real ones.
Or put something there that will be hard to resist, but then plug it in so that it'll shock someone when they go to steal it. You know, little things like that. Like, there's lots of suggestions about what to do.
Now I have to go search out for this video.
It is on my blog. It's obviously on the Facebook.
I mean, East Troy is a very small populated area.
It is.
Wouldn't somebody know this person or know this car? If they're local to the area.
It happened at 4:30 in the morning. Oh. It was raining. They didn't pull in the driveway, so we didn't get a license plate on the vehicle. And they're rare.
They scouted out your goats.
They were wearing a rain jacket. So, like, they were prepared for something. And, like, they overshot the house, and then they reversed the wrong way on the highway. It's weird. You got to check the video out.
We got to check it out. You know what? In fact, for our listeners out there, I'm gonna do your. I'm gonna treat you. I'm gonna link to it in the show notes post.
Wow.
So we will share the link to that. Yeah. Maybe we can get some feedback.
I'm gonna have to turn page caching on my website so that it doesn't.
You don't want a white screen. No, you
don't. You're gonna give me all the crazy WP Tavern traffic.
Yeah, crazy is what. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and every other episode on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JEFFR0. Oh, before I go, for anyone watching.
What do you got? Oh, look at that.
I am now part of the WordPress capital P police, where my job is to serve and correct. So I want to send a shout out to Nick Hams, who sent me this badge, and it comes with a pretty powerful magnet.
That's great. It's
out of focus, but this is a pretty powerful magnet, and it's still got that burned wood smell to it, so it smells really good too.
Is it like just pine that
I don't know if it's pine. It's wood, but it's etched with it's burned in, and it smells really good. So
incredibly jealous. That's amazing.
So now we're thinking about somebody suggested that we need a FOGO badge.
Oh yeah,
we need people to serve and correct with the FOGO.
Love it. That's a great idea.
And Nick is actually he's like full blown into creating all kinds of different swag with WordPress and other stuff. So
I follow Nick on Instagram, and all of his is amazing. He's got a lot of old Game Boy stuff, and he repurposes a lot of electronics and refurbishes stuff. He's got a great shop too. I don't know. I need to give him the business. We all probably should. It's a good
Where could people follow you at? Where would they be able to see videos of people stealing your goats?
JJJ.blog/goats, I guess. I should probably change the slug to something shorter, but
goats - stolen, you know, don't use anything like that.
It's true. I know. And that's the thing that, you know, I'll do that with my blog post. I'll just let WordPress create the slug for a blog post, but for a page, I'm editing those down. I'm trimming the page slug down.
Okie dokie. So that's
lady still our goats.
Everyone enjoy the rest of your week. And we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Stay safe, everybody. Have fun. Bye-bye. Say bye, John.
Say bye, John. Bye.